Tape 2, Side 1. Continuing our interview with Dr. Paul Kaplan.
World War II broke out on December 5th, 1942. And I was on the train to New York City to take a course. At that time, in fact, at NYU. And I went one night to a fine restaurant, and then I sent Gertrude a card, and I said something like, despite hostilities and war, New York is an exciting place. I described the restaurant. I hope to bring you here someday. And I even mentioned I hope to marry you soon. So when I came back, I found my orders to military service in Denver. I was assigned to the Army Air Force. At that time, there was no separate Air Force at Lowry Field in Denver. So I wrote to Gertrude and I said, we should have to get married in Denver. And she agreed. And the family came to Denver. This was in the summer, I believe, August. And I found a rabbi. All the rabbis were on vacation. So I found a young rabbi who was, his first wedding. So I had to hold him up.
he was more nervous than me.
He performed the ceremony. And then after the wedding, we went to
the Olin Hotel,
which is a hotel of old folks where we honeymooned, and then to
Rocky
Mountain National Park, where we spent a few nights in a log cabin.
The first and last time he got me into
a log cabin.
I've been there.
Anyway, we spent a very happy year.
Twenty months in
Denver. We met a lot of people for a wartime experience, this was a great place to be. But I received orders to join a general hospital. This was in March or April of 1944. So I was transferred there to a general hospital in Salina, Kansas, that was preparing to go overseas. And I'm not sure I should go into all the detail of Salina, Kansas, but in Salina, Kansas, the little town was overwhelmed with soldiers, and it was very difficult to find a place to stay. You could get a hotel for one night only. So Gertrude went to the Presbyterian ministry and said, is there any way, where we could stay. And he said, there's a woman named, an elderly woman who has a house named Murphy. She may give you, first she said to Gertrude, do you smoke? No. I said, well then you may be able to get a place. So she went to interview, or to be interviewed rather, by Auntie Murphy. Auntie Murphy looked at her, and this was a Eastern woman with a fur hat and beautiful blonde. And she was a little suspicious. But then when I came for the interview, she was enamored by me. And she said, yes, you can have this. But no cooking, you can't have breakfast. We had a room with a big old brass bed, and finally after
a bathroom.
And a bathroom. private bath in an old house. And finally, after a day or so, she reneged and she said to Gertrude, yes, you can have breakfast here, and soon we're having dinner there, and so on, despite the blonde hair. Why, after, I think, 6 weeks of basic training with the General Hospital, I was sent overseas to England, to Exeter, and Gertrude drove home. Now, I won't go into her drive home, because that's her interview, not mine. This was Exeter, E-X-E-T-E-R, England, with the General Hospital. This was on June 7th. No, what the D-Day?
June 6th.
On June 6th, I can remember the armada of planes going overhead. Now there were a number of casualties among medical officers on D-Day and the few days following that. These medical officers had to be replaced. So I was tapped as a replacement medical officer, and I was sent to Normandy on a LST with a group of other physicians and a group of other replacements of other sorts. I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Infantry. Now I was, and I met with the commanding officer, who I was not going to be I was not going to jump, I was not going to be on the parachute division, but I was going to be in the next wave of gliders. And he showed me all the gliders that have crashed, and he said, in this organization, we all have esprit de corps. And I said, General, I don't have esprit de corps. I was immediately transferred to an infantry division, where I became a battalion surgeon in an infantry division. In an infantry division in the hedgerow fighting in Normandy. And I was a battalion surgeon in Normandy, Brittany, northern France, from June until December, about a year. And then I was sent home on points, and Gertrude met me at Fort Dix. Oh, that's in France. And I was separated at Fort Dix. I had to be examined, going to the hospital for an examination before my discharge. Oh, and there were a few harrowing experiences, but one that I remember, we were, you know, outside of Reims, I think, or Rennes, France, and camped, and a farmer ran over and said, is there a doctor here? Is there a doctor here? My wife is delivering. And I said, yes, I'll. So I accompanied him to the farmhouse, and I delivered a baby boy. He said, in his little English, what's your name? It's Paul. I'm going to name this boy Paul.
Oh.
So there's a baby boy, age 50. Well, no longer a boy. There's a French boy named 54, whose name is Paul, named after me in France.
You talked about harrowing experiences. This is a really important time in our world. Tell us something about that.
Well, being a battalion, these days, physicians are no longer battalion aid surgeons. They don't use them in the front lines. But I was in the front lines, and really with the infantry troops, bombarded by the German 88s, and following the troops through Normandy and Brittany and France. It was slept on the ground, slept in foxholes, I had really a great difficulty. I could never finish a foxhole. And when I finished a foxhole, somebody would jump in and then I would be lying on top of him with my derriere sticking out. So my greatest challenge was trying to finish a foxhole in time and get into it before somebody else did. So we finished that. We came back to the United States, and I still had an office left. Gertrude, this is her story, so I won't go into that, but she reserved the office that I had in West End. The building was owned by a man named by the man who owned the bank, and he said that he would keep the office at very little rent as long as I wanted it. So Gertrude kept it. So that after I got back and went into practice, it was my decision I was not going to stay in West End and stay in practice there. And the decision, what should I do? And a physician named Harry Margolis, who's now deceased, I became acquainted with him. I had met him at Montefiore. He was also a friend of a mutual friend named Nurnberg. And Margolis asked me if I would join him, and I said, yes, I would. Gertrude is now pregnant, and the question was starting myself or going somewhere else for more education or joining him, and I thought the easiest way was to join him. So I did, and we were in practice together for 8 years, and it became pretty evident that I was really not going to go anywhere. I was always going to be an, quote, assistant, end of quote. So I made the decision to leave and to go into my own practice. Gertrude would have had me do this years before, but since I'm slow to make decisions, it took me this long. So I opened an office myself in the Jenkins Arcade, and I was on the staff then of St. Margaret's Hospital and Montefiore Hospital, and I have an appointment at the university as an instructor in medicine. I worked there in the fall clinic one afternoon, so a week. He was a rheumatologist, so that pursued that specialty as well. My practice grew, and our family grew. We had Donna, and then subsequently Robbie, who is
Could you tell us, for example, the birth dates?
Donna's March 5th, 1946, and Robbie is June 19th, 1949. I'll just go on with my professional career and leave my personal anecdotes to later.
All right.
Since I can't do all of this
in the
next 15 minutes. Within a few years, within 5 years, I became so busy that I could not handle it myself. And a man named Marshall Levy, who was practicing with his brother in Detroit, learned that I was interested in finding an associate. And he corresponded with me, and he left Detroit and moved to Pittsburgh and joined me. And our practice continued to grow. We needed someone else. So about 5 years later, a young man named Philip Balk, who had completed his residency at Montefiore, was approached, and he joined the two of us as well. We practiced in the Jenkins Arcade until approximately 25 years ago, when we heard rumors that the Jenkins Arcade was going to be torn down, so that a year before that happened, I moved to 3500 Fifth Avenue, where I still remain. I subsequently got a fourth physician named Terrence Starrs, a fifth physician named Patricia McClay, a sixth physician, Patricia Starrs, S-T-A-R-Z. Patricia McClay, then Edward Miller, and David Mitchell. Just in passing, David Mitchell's deceased. Patricia McClay moved to Florida. Philip Balk retired from private practice to take a full-time job at Shadyside Hospital. And we have now hired two other physicians who are going to join our practice to replace those who have left. But that's not as pertinent as my own personal experiences, I assume. I'm an assistant professor of medicine at UPMC. About nearly 2 years ago, our practice was purchased by UPMC. So I and my associates are now employees at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. We're in private practice, but only as employees. I continue to do teaching in the office. That is, the University of Pittsburgh sends their medical students and interns to our office one day a week for one-on-one training, where they will either see a new patient and then I will review the patient with them, or more often than not, they just accompany us and I discuss, as the others in the office discuss, the patients with them. This is preceptorship. The others in our practice, though, maintain in-hospital associations. I no longer go into the hospital. I've elected not to to have responsibility of inpatient care. It's time-consuming. It's a lot more responsible. So the others in our practice do that. I just do office practice as well as teaching. Over the years, I have published, might give you my curriculum vitae, about 30-plus papers, and a chapter in a book. We have an apartment in Florida, and this is still medical, and I'm have a responsibility in the South Palm Beach Federation. The South Palm Beach Federation has a great lecture series, a distinguished lecture series, in which individuals from both Florida and elsewhere in the country speak to large groups of retired citizens. These are held in synagogues and they attract anywhere from 300 to 500 people in the audience. I've been on that. I have a teaching assignment there, and I do this once a year. It will be a lecture assignment. This coming year will be my fourth year. And I speak on some medical subject that has some relationship to Judaism. My first lecture was Freud's Jewish Identity. My second lecture was the medical background of the Holocaust, the 18th and 19th centuries, not the 20th century. The third subject was genetic diseases of Jews and other minorities. The subject that I've chosen for this year is going to not be entirely related to any Judaic subject, but it's going to be, it's going to have something to do with preserving the health of the aging. I haven't really given it a title, but I'm going to talk about health and aging. I haven't quite, it's not given until January, so I haven't quite established the exact subject or the format, but it's going to be some of what I've mentioned. Well, returning to I wanted to talk about some of my experiences in practice, particularly my association with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. I may not have 10 minutes, may not be enough.
But well,
just, I can start.
You can start it, and we'll pick it up.
About 30 years ago, I was invited to be the physician for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra on their overseas tours. This invitation came by way of one of the members of the orchestra, the personnel director named Sidney Cohen, who was a friend. Our first trip with the orchestra was to Japan with the late Steinberg. We since have made 10 trips to the Far East, Europe, Mexico, Scandinavia. Each one has been a memorable experience. And I presume it might be appropriate even to talk about these if you wish.
Yes, indeed.
The late Steinberg had a problem with his legs. I was not his physician. In retrospect, I think I have a good idea of what he had, but that's not pertinent. But he had arranged to have acupuncture in Japan. And he wanted me to accompany him to the acupuncture clinic, which was the Osaka, at the Osaka Medical School, O-S-A-K-A. We were in Osaka, Japan, or Osaka, as it may be pronounced. The chauffeur would pick him up and then pick me up at the hotel, and we drove to the acupuncture clinic. And the head of the clinic spoke English, and he said, have you ever done acupuncture before? Have you ever done acupuncture? No. Do you know anything about acupuncture? No. He said, I'd like to teach you acupuncture. I said, wonderful. He said, first you have to have acupuncture on yourself. I had sprained my ankle previously and I still had a little discomfort, so he said, we'll do acupuncture on your ankle. So the first day I spent watching him do acupuncture. The second day, he said, now you will do the acupuncture. So he gave me patients and charts, and the patient's diseases, but the charts were all in Japanese. So I said to him, I don't read Japanese, I don't know what's wrong with these patients. He said, doesn't make any difference. You're the acupuncture anyway. So I was provided with the acupuncture needles and pledgets of cotton with alcohol, and the patients would lie down, and they would lie on their abdomen, so I'm sure their troubles must have been in their back. So according to the instructions that I received for a day previously, I gave them acupuncture. What I was treating, I had no idea. And in fact, you would use the same needle. In those days, that was the days before HIV was known. So you would run the needle through the pledget of cotton alcohol, and then use the needle to give you. By the end of the day, the pledget of cotton with the alcohol is dried. I was still using the same dried pledget of cotton and the same syringe and giving out that. I have no idea what I treated. I brought back with me all the acupuncture equipment that I needed, but I've never used it since. I remember we were about through with our trip to Japan. We were having dinner after the concert in the top floor of a hotel in Osaka, and at the next table were a group of Japanese, and they were speaking English. So I went over to one of them. I said, I'm Dr. Kaplan, the other. And there was an orthopedist there who had trained with Ferguson in Pittsburgh, who spoke English. So I said, you know, I just spent a week at the acupuncture clinic in Osaka. Can you tell me about the acupuncture clinic? And he said, my English not good enough.
Very smart man.
On the way out, he was carrying with him the partially open bottle of wine under his arm. And he pointed to me like this. He called me over and he said, acupuncture, it's as good as this wine. Or the wine, it's as good as the acupuncture. That was my experience with acupuncture in Japan. We made two trips to Japan and three trips to Hong Kong and one trip to China and one trip to Mexico and half a dozen trips to Europe and Scandinavia. We went to the Edinburgh Music Festival twice, the Salzburg Festival once with the symphony. Each of these trips was memorable with enormous experiences. The trips after Steinberg were with Previn and then with Mizell. We had guest conductors, Muta and Eschenbach was there. Zednik Mizell, M-A-T-Z-A-L. Their mother had been a couple other guest conductors.
Muta?
I said Muta. I don't know who else.
We have to borrow your list.
Yeah,
and we'll have to hear more about these experiences.
Some of the assistants, Donald Johannes.
Oh, Donald Johannes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there then was Michael...
Michael Tilson-Thomas.
Michael Tilson-Thomas, thank you. And Lancaster.
Actually, I've kept all of the records of these trips.
Did you tell them the preparation?
But if you want to...
We're going to have to go back to get more about this.
If you... I could spend 2 hours on the trips alone without doing anything else.
Well, let's make it an hour, and we'll come back for the hour. All right?
All right.
So we'd like to hear about that.
I haven't finished yet. Yeah. I haven't finished with my personal life.
No.
Tell me about...
End of tape 2. Side one, to be continued on tape on the other side.